pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Tuesday morning. 251-343-0106. That's the text line. If you want to be in touch with the show, hit me up there. Still to come on the program, Will Hampson for P2 Public Affairs will join us, so stick around for that. Kind of recapping the news, I guess we are, it sounds like the Clancy jury is deadlocked. They can't reach a unanimous verdict. We knew when they, since they, it's been this long, this was sort of the anticipated outcome. So that this is interesting to watch here. I don't know if it's how this is going to go. It's Plymouth, Massachusetts. So, you know, what kind of bleeding hearts do you have on that jury? We haven't heard much about the jury here or any, and there's been people in the courtroom who are jury watchers. But, hey, that's the world we live in now. The theory, this is a theory presented to me. Just like, how can you kill your three children and claim this postpartum psychosis? And how plausible is this? This woman wanted to commit suicide. And she wouldn't take her kids with her, or she didn't want them going through life without a mother. And, I mean, it was an act of, a very selfish act. Yeah, Mike writes, supposedly there were two female jurors wearing pink ribbons in solidarity with the evil woman who murdered her three kids. So, I don't know. For some reason, I'm more interested in this crime time and prime time case just because the legal precedent that it could set. What else here? Price of oil continues to go up right now. It's at $88 a barrel. It's not good. Well, who cares about paying a dollar more gas? A lot of people do. A lot of people do, and this is going to impact your voting behavior, whether we like it or not, okay? And if that price isn't down in the 70s here soon, by October, it's going to have ramifications beyond just the pump, okay? It's going to have political ramifications. Those are the facts. Maybe I'm wrong. At least that's maybe not the facts. It's my sense of things. Let's see what else we got here. Some Doug Jones antics. We went over those in the first couple of hours. Continues to kind of be a thing. Oh, guys. So, Trip Skipper. Some of you may remember his father, the late John Skipper, very active Republican politics. He penned an op-ed for AL.com, sort of giving a Tommy Tuberville an attaboy for warning about Sharia law and the coming Muslim caliphate to Alabama or whatever it is. It was essentially essentially had to do a lot to do with that. And he says, hey, coach was right. We need to give him props for seeing this coming. Well, didn't sit well with the hierarchy, the Pulitzer Prize winning John Archbold. Wrote a op-ed attacking his own publication today. I hope they remember where they came from. Yes, we can only have Archibald Whitmire approved conservatives like Cameron Smith, I suppose, on the valuable real estate of AL.com. I mean, whatever you think about the op-ed and the merits of it, well, fine. But like and I'm surprised that AL.com, I guess they had to or they faced a revolt, but he spoke out against it and he just did this. This is not what the publication that I write for should stand for. You got to check it out. I mean, I don't recommend AL.com often, but this whiny screed from John Archbold really is kind of priceless, attacking his own publication for running that op-ed. Two five one 3430106. I got to get through some of these texts. John writes, I went to go see South play Auburn. I walked away from a campus and thought to myself, this is a very nice place. Sometimes Auburn can match up against of the ages by 16 points. Sometimes Auburn can beat a South Alabama team by 16 points. Named texture, anybody with two brain cells can see the current administration top down is doing everything they can to line their pockets. As they during the Ivy administration, as far as Doug Jones did nothing, and it'll be another administration lining his pockets to help the Alabamians. Well, why don't you move? From Trouble in Magnolia Springs. Paul, we're living through the if you could keep the Republic part. I'm not there. It's not. How much is this really impacting people's lives? And yes, it does impact your life. I'm not saying it doesn't. But do you think you have more freedoms in the United States? Or do you think if you moved to France or Australia or you know, any other Britain, some other democracy, Canada, in the Western world? And we're still on top here, Paul. Fire Dog, if I'm just glad I'm not on that jury, there's a lot of questions there. And they text her, so Lindsay killed herself. Would they be looking into Patrick being guilty? He had something to do with this. See, there's a lot of that. But what did he have to do with it, this criminal? What did he have to do with it? I mean, how? It just sounds to me like this is head toward a hung jury. Southern Jedi with the Iran war and pedos going unarrested with the Republicans who have already lost. Literally, they just had to stay out of wars, arrest child predators, and cut the excessive spending, and the Republicans would have won in a landslide. It's just a lot of government out there. I tell you something that's intriguing. It's just, the entitlement culture. That's where the money is. Sure, shrimp on treadmills and these things are these grants, these things the government's spending money on. I think they've done an okay job at cracking down on a lot of that. But that's not where the debts and the deficits lie. Now, the Epstein thing was really screwed up. There was a perception that Donald Trump was going to expose the Clintons or somebody. And for some reason, that they've ran away from it. So I don't know what's going on there, but you're right about that part of it, that the Epstein saga seems like they should have done more on that. But even Dan Bongino, who's walked away from the administration, gone back to the radio. Let's see, I mean, like, he goes on Fox and says there's nothing there. I've looked at it. You know, my sense of it is that there was something that was untoward and there could have been. They're not going to write it down on paper. There's not going to be documents detailing what the government did. So I don't know what we're looking for. I mean, I know we're looking for the truth. But where does the truth lie? Scroll over to Clancy jury is ridiculous. Meanwhile, with a woman who went on a stabbing murder rage in New York City might have been expected to get that sympathy from the equally nutty fembots. I was surprised to hear Mamdani thank police for their actions and not call her an alleged killer. Well, yeah, Times Square is one of those places. It's got to be safe. Now, it's got a little here lately in the last 10 years since Bloomberg left Altus. I don't know, any of you spend time in New York City? Because New York is, it's in some ways, very similar to D.C. During the Giuliani years, during the Bloomberg years, I mean, you go to Times Square, it's like Disney World. De Blasio gets elected, and things kind of go south. At least on the public safety front. The subway is not as safe as it once was. You can see a real tangible distinction there. Now, it's been probably 5 years since I've spent a lot of time in New York City. Hope to get up there real soon. You need to spend time there and take it in if you've never done it. But that's kind of my sense of it. That there is a real impact from these, like, socialist, self-proclaimed socialist types taking over these cities and rethinking criminal justice. We can't do stop and frisk. But is that a Fourth Amendment violation, you know? Let's keep rolling here. Joel, isn't it against the law for jerks to wear or show any partiality to what they are doing? It seems like they shouldn't be able to wear peak and support to show that meets favoritism. I don't know what the rules are. Courts have their own rules. Juries, I mean, you know, a lot of it's at the judge's discretion. And some of it is like, you know, you strike that juror from the jury pool, potential juror, I should say. Jason, sadly, the life has been overtaken by the victimhood class, and we see it with Clancy and Legee supporters. Who ever thought supporting murder would be trendy? It is a little odd. It's kind of a new phenomenon. Maybe not mainstream, but it's catching on. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
More, much more than this, I did it my.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Tuesday morning. 251-343-0106. Hit us up on the text line. Mike writes, do you have any suggestions for me to take my son to see during campus visit on the plains? Might take him up a few weeks. Gainesville and Oxford, I know, but the only thing I know about Auburn is Mama Goldberg's. Niffers. Obviously, you want to go downtown to Timmer's Corner. I was never like a big fan of the lemonade, but you got to do it. And then hopefully, given the outcome, you'll be able to watch Auburn fans roll the trees there at Timmer's Corner. But I don't want to get too far ahead of myself here. We'll just get through Baylor and Southern Miss first. Unnamed texture, I don't agree with it, but I think Clancy walks. I don't think she walks. I think she may not be found guilty, but there's going to have to be some kind of verdict that addresses the problem here. Unnamed texture, hey, Jeff, I got my stimulus check and my tariff check. Now I'm going to use it to buy a new home. Moral lies from the man who was going to change everything. You did get a stimulus check, a tariff check, or you shouldn't rely on the government to make big purchases, but I assume you're being facetious and you don't like Donald Trump. And then, so if Lindsay had killed herself, would they, oh, you already asked that. Well, could he ask you about the husband? Could Lindsay's husband could have killed the kids, drugged Lindsay, and he was the male voice she heard before he slit her throat and threw her out the window? No, I'm not buying that. Because here's the thing, and those of you who are on the data center flock camera conspiracy mindset, they knew where he was. They can track his cell phone. I feel like that would be easily debunked, or it would have been brought as evidence. I mean, if we live in a surveillance state, and I'm not saying that we don't, wouldn't they be able to track his whereabouts at the time of the murder? / alleged suicide or attempted suicide. But that's our, such as it is, that's our news cycle right now. Coming up on tomorrow's show, so we got Joey Clark and got a couple of guests to be named later. I'll have to figure that out at some point today. But that's coming up on tomorrow's program. So to come on today's show, P2 Public Affairs Vice President Will Hampson will talk to us. We'll talk elections and the current cycle. And Congress is back, ladies and gentlemen. They're at least the House is back. And there's some votes. I think a lot of them are kind of bed check votes. Roll call. But Congress is getting back, and it's going to be a very abbreviated quick run here, and the question is, can they get the Save America Act done? And I don't think they can. They would have to change the rules of the Senate. It's like Dale Jackson and I were talking about yesterday. Those of you who don't like the filibuster, fair. But it's a tradition of the Senate that gives the Senate way more power than it probably should have. Is it constitutional? Yes. It's not in the Constitution, but the Senate could govern itself however it sees fit. And so the way this works is now they could tweak to the rules and require an actual filibuster. But to end debate, they're not voting on a piece of legislation. They're voting to end debate. And then that bill comes back up. And then they vote on it. And then it only has to pass by a 51-vote majority. It's not that you have to pass a piece of legislation with 60 votes itself. You have to have the 60 votes to end debate, to end the filibuster, to break through, to cloture. 251-343-0106. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Old Rope Elijah, well, he never got a kiss. Old Rope Elijah.
good time.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for being with us on this Tuesday morning, or what's left of it. 251-343-0106, time permitting. We will we will get to your text before the conclusion of today's broadcast. Joining us now on the line, as promised, from P2 Public Affairs, our Tuesday regular, Will Hampson. Will, good morning. How are you?
Jeff, doing great. Glad to be with you as always.
Hey, thanks for making time for us. We appreciate it. Well, it's election day in some places, like New Hampshire. I don't know, but anything capturing your attention?
Not really. I think we kind of know how a lot of these races are going to go. I think the thing that we're looking for is really turnout, right? I mean, how many Democrats turn out in their primaries versus how many Republicans turn out. But even that, you can't really read too much into it at this point. I think Democrats at this point in time are going to be a little bit more fired up to go out and have their voices heard in the primary. But we'll see how it all turns out. And I'm sure no matter what happens, Jeff, that it will somehow be a very serious loss for Donald Trump heading into tomorrow.
Well, that's how it always is. New Hampshire is interesting to me. And it's just Chris Pappas. I don't know the validity of these polls, but they're showing him down to Sununu. Could that be a pickup for Republicans?
Yeah, I've heard a lot of optimism lately about New Hampshire, Jeff, as you're kind of starting to see the map shift here. A lot of these races come, you know, into a little bit more focus in D.C. and nationally. Republicans have, a lot of excitement about the New Hampshire and Maine races. New England, kind of a beacon of hope, I think, for Republicans that we're going to hold that Maine seat with Susan Collins and then potentially pick one up with Sununu in New Hampshire. So absolutely, you know, I think that's one that that Republicans are tracking really closely. And you're not hearing the doom and gloom like you are in a lot of other places throughout the country.
Is a lot of that, you know, Republicans have a cash advantage. And you know, I get tired of the it's kind of a tired trope about money being a mother's milk of politics. But, I mean, it is an election cycle with headwinds for Republicans. We've established that. But maybe, I don't know what the NRSC and how the RNC are going to use these resources. But, man, the Democratic National Committee, it's in disarray. They should be humming along here, doing well. And they got – it's not just like an electoral deficiency. But I think these guys who would typically write checks to Democratic Party causes are holding back some. A, you don't know what the leadership is there. And B, they're kind of – there's sort of this chilling effect with all this DSA stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially in places like New England, where they're feeling it. They're looking over and seeing these DSA candidates be uber successful in you know, places like Massachusetts, like New York. And then they kind of look over. These are really independent states, right, Jeff? I mean, Maine, New Hampshire. These are states where we kind of see weird things happen. Even Vermont has, you know, obviously a very, very liberal version of a Republican, but has a Republican governor in the state up there. Some weird things happen in these states. And I think, look, at the end of the day, we can't understate how important the known quantities and the known factors are in these elections, right? I mean, you have a Sununu running, who is about as well known as you will get in New Hampshire politics. That family's been around forever. They're well liked. That makes a huge difference. Having a Susan Collins, who's been around forever, is a known quantity. When you start to see some of these stories, like we've seen in places like Maine with Graham Plattner, some of the replacements have their own baggage. You really start to realize that the known quantities in these places, the kind of steady Republicans, are going to play well. And I think that's another thing that you see, Jeff. You don't really hear a lot of crazy things coming out of coming out of Maine about Susan Collins. She is what she is. The whole thing on her is going to be, is she too closely tied to Trump to win in Maine? Same thing with the Sununu News. You don't have all of this baggage. Then you go and you look at some of these other places, right? I mean, you got Mike Collins in Georgia. You've got some of these other races where there is a little bit more baggage. That kind of steady, calm hand. Now, are we going to get super conservative Tommy Tuberville types winning in places like Maine or New Hampshire? Absolutely not. Are these guys going to be darlings of the right? No. But they are Republicans. They will allow us, hopefully, to keep control of the Senate, allow us to keep control of at least one branch of government where we can stop impeachments of Donald Trump and the such. So having those steady hands in some of these places, I think, is going to be a really, really big asset for Republicans. And hopefully, Jeff, you not have to spend as much money. These are states that are obviously a little bit cheaper. New Hampshire, Maine, hopefully we can save a little bit of money and have it to spend elsewhere as well.
Yeah, and so tell me this, and what's the reality here? Now, you hear from the media that Donald Trump's a drag on the ticket. This isn't like George W. Bush in 06 at all. He was much more of a drag, and it was an unpopular war. And there's some headwinds for Trump here, but I think it just varies based on the locality, the Trump impact on these House and Senate seats.
Absolutely, Jeff. But the other thing that can't be understated, right? You look at some of these places, North Carolina, for example, where we are running against an incumbent governor, someone who has won statewide at the top of the ticket. You look at Georgia, and we're running against someone who is now the favorite to be the Democrats' nominee for president of the United States. Obviously, everyone wants to point to the Trump factor, but the reality is in some of these places, the deck was stacked against us anyway. Even if Trump stays out, yada, yada, all of the things that people want to come and claim, you're still running against some generational talent. There are some really, really good Democrats on the ballot in some of these swing states. And that is absolutely, I think, a bigger anchor to Republicans' chances than anything that Trump or any of these candidates are doing. They're just tough. They're difficult races. And so we have to really be able to look and say, where can we win? Where can we be successful? Another example, Sherrod Brown in Ohio, a three-term incumbent, effectively, sure, lost in 2024, but someone who's been around politics for 20 years in the state of Ohio, running against Husted, who's a fairly new commodity there. I mean, all of these dynamics are really tough, Jeff. And so the idea that, you know, Donald Trump is weighing these guys down, I just don't think that's the case. I think Democrats got really lucky with some really good candidates across the country. And this was always going to be a really tough cycle. It's a midterm cycle. Donald Trump is not on the ballot. There are a lot of Republicans that will not go vote when Trump is not on the ballot. And we've got some really tough races where we're trying to beat some really good candidates in a lot of these places. So, no, the doom and gloom of Trump is bringing all of these people down, I just don't think that's the case. I think that there are some really unique dynamics, and Democrats have done a really good job of putting us in a tough spot.
The Trump war chest is another one that comes up, and he's not parted with a lot of it. I suspect he'll part with some of it, but he should be... or at least this is the gripe from some Capitol Hill Republicans. Why isn't he doing more? What could he do with that, especially this late in the game?
Well, yes, Jeff. And I think the frustration of people looking at the Trump war chest, right, is that you've got some Trump candidates who are lagging, right? I fully understand why Donald Trump may not want to spend significantly on behalf of Susan Collins, who at times has been a thorn in the side of his agenda. I fully understand that. What I don't understand is why he's not spending big for a Ken Paxton in Texas, why he's not spending big for a Mike Collins in Georgia. I mean, these are people that he endorsed. These are people that he put a lot of weight behind. And these are people, frankly, Jeff, that became our nominees because they received the Trump endorsement and the Trump backing. And so I think that's where people would like to see a little bit more of this. Now, obviously, John Kennedy from Louisiana, who is frankly not a very good senator, a pretty uniparty senator there in Louisiana, went on TV and said, you know, Trump stuck us with these guys, so we're not going to do anything. We're going to make him, you know, have to come in and save some of these people. Well, that's not the right attitude either, right? I mean, the establishment burnt through $100 million for John Cornyn to lose by 25 points in his primary. So the establishment types have not done a very good job on their end either of making sure that we have the resources in the right places to win. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're looking at the resources that the president has. He's got a lot of money. And I don't think there's anyone in American politics with an ability to move the needle better than he can, especially in a short amount of time. I mean, we're 60 days out. We've got September and October, and then we're voting here. So I think when you're looking at it from that perspective, absolutely. I think this is an all hands on deck situation. I think the president needs to start spending. I think national Republicans need to do a better job of spending a little bit more wisely. We all got to do what we can here, and it is a sprint. We're down big in some of these states. If you're 10-plus points down 60 days out, now's the time. You really can't be waiting around much longer.
How much of this is, you mentioned John Kennedy, but I think there's an undercurrent there of Republicans who aren't happy that Trump went for Ken Paxton over Cornyn, and they're a little bitter about it, and they're holding back some.
Jeff, I think if you were to ask just about every United States senator behind closed doors, secretly, kind of similar to how they vote for majority leader, hey, do you want Paxton to win and Trump to have kind of won the day? Or would you rather send a message to the president by Paxton losing and we lose the Senate? I think most of them would say, I'd rather lose the Senate for a cycle and stick it to Trump. I think that's the way that the Senate generally feels. They obviously felt like not only were they going to support Cornyn, but they were willing to spend hundreds of millions of dollars to try and tip the scales in that election. They lost. The people are fed up. But I also think, Jeff, that the establishment types understand that while Cornyn was the victim of the message was sent to all of them. If you are a senator who is trying to make deals behind the scenes, you want to be the deal maker. You want to be the one making, you know, making sure that all these omnibus bills get passed, and you want to pass some liberal things, and you really find it important to work with your Democrat colleagues over helping Republicans win. Then, of course, you want to see Ken Paxton lose. It's a big message. And so I think, unfortunately, there are a lot of those senators. Unfortunately, a lot of those senators, Jeff, come from deep red states, places where, you know, they frankly will go on Hannity and tell you how we need to stick it to everybody. And then they'll go and they'll work on a bill with John Ossoff. To make him look better while we're trying to beat him. I mean, there are people that will do that all the time, and I just don't think that they are putting the Republican Party or our good candidates ahead of their own ambitions and what they want. So absolutely, there are a lot of Republicans in D.C., Jeff, that would love nothing more than to see Ken Paxton lose, even if it comes at the expense of our Senate and effectively our country.
How you feeling about that Tallarico Paxton race? Because the media would have you believe that this, they're going to, you know, but it's the same with Susan Collins. Texas is going to flip blue. Susan Collins is going to lose. And somehow or another, that doesn't happen. What do you make of it?
Yeah, I mean, the difference would be, Jeff, if they didn't tell us this every cycle. I mean, we heard it with Beto O'Rourke. We've heard it time and time again where Ted Cruz was going to lose. I mean, we're always going to lose Texas. We're always going to lose Maine. It's always the storyline coming out of this. Now, is it going to be a comfortable race? No. But that's the frustrating part, right? I mean, Ted Cruz won his election, his last one, by 3 or 4 points. It was really tough. It was a tough race. And you didn't hear the doom and gloom coming from the United States Senate that, oh, gosh, you know, Ted Cruz only won by 4 points and we had to come in and help him. They came in and helped them. It's what they did. It's just what you do. Texas is getting bluer. It is going to continue to be a very difficult state. It's becoming the new Florida. It's very diverse. It's very big. It's very expensive. All of these dynamics, they understand. They know exactly what's going on. But to your point, Jeff, I think that Tallarico is so out of touch with the average Texas voters that once the campaign and these national apparatuses are able to kind of show voters what Tallarico really is, I think it's a pretty easy pathway to victory for Paxton. I think he's still going to win, but there are just a lot of people that would rather see him lose. And I think that's a really, really devastating state of affairs. If you're the average rank and file Republican voter and you're looking at our elected officials who would rather see a radical, radical Democrat in Tallarico win because some Republicans think that that's a win for them and sticking it to Donald Trump, I think it only reinforces why the average rank and file voter is so disgusted with the direction and the leadership, particularly of the United States Senate, but with Congress as a whole. Look no further than this. They're trying to beat him. They're quite giddy about it. They're not trying to hide it. I think if you're an average rank and file voter, it's just reason 1 billion of why the elected officials that we have sent there hate us so much.
Will, folks want to find you online, how can they do so?
Be Will Hampson on X, Jeff.
Yeah, I'll check it out. Will, we always appreciate it. We'll talk again soon.
Pleasure as always. We'll talk to you.
All right, we'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. To the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on what's left of this Tuesday morning. Bill asked, any chance the time change proposal makes it in this legislative session? I don't know. The tendency from the Alabama legislature is to kind of hand it off to the feds, and you may have to wait for the feds to do something. Real quick, Jeff, I was watching OJ drive around when they thought he was going to commit suicide with one of my older brothers, and they assured me it wasn't going to happen because black people don't commit suicide. That's a white thing, and I got to thinking about it, and they're probably right. Well, thank you for that insight, Tim. Squirrelverine Caroline Leavitt ran into New Hampshire a few years ago. I wonder if she could have a better chance now or next time. Lubu, I apologize for sounding like a goofball, but I'm really honored to be it must be somebody else's contacts here. Mike, this should have been the easiest midterm for the party in our lifetime, but Trump decided to renege on what got him elected and peel the country while claiming he's making it rain the data center money. It's all asinine. And then Ultra Runner, using mayonnaise and baked goods is normal and often preferable. There's more to the brownie story. Probably so. I don't know. But anyway, enough of that. Coming up here shortly, midday, Bo Bill. Sean, what you got?
I'd like to just talk about, we could do the whole show on, what you put in brownies. But that's not going to probably happen. Maybe we'll have time later. Right now, just watching what's happening half a world away as U.S. Central Command confirmed U.S. forces began strikes against the Revolutionary Guard Corps. This has been going on for an hour now. Three commercial vessels have been struck by Iranian projectiles in the last 48 hours. Now CENTCOM is, we're shooting back, in other words, and it's on. So we'll see how much is going on with this. We'll get you the latest information on that. Also coming up, just really after we get the show started here in a few minutes, the drawing. We've been doing this all throughout the summer, America's 250 Summer Showcase, and it'll be time today to draw a grand prize winner. So we'll do that coming up in the first segment of Midday Mobile. Plus, April Marie Fogle joins me and Admiral Kent Davis in hour number two. A lot to talk about with him, especially with what's going on in with Iran right now. I mean, he served last time we were escorting freighters through back in the late 80s, but his retaliation lawsuit here against Governor Ivey has sat dormant longer than most. And I'm going to ask him what he thinks is going on with this when he joins us in the 1 o'clock hour.
That price of oil is creeping up. Now, I think that $90 a barrel is the danger zone.
Yes.
And we're at 89.50 right now.
Yep. I've got that. Got my e-bike, and that's how I'm going to be getting to work. So y'all clear the way for me on airport.
Ooh, that's some treacherous travel right there on a bicycle.
Yes, for sure.
I've done it before a long time ago, but I don't know how to do that now.
No, probably not. I just figure out we'll have to carpool from out in West Mobile, so y'all live out
maybe,
by me.
Maybe you go down Old Shell Road or something.
I got to figure it out, yeah, watching the oil prices as well. So we'll talk about that coming up.
All right, well, that's it for me. I got to get out of here. I will try to do better tomorrow. Sorry, Phyllis, I forgot to say goodbye. This has been the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. This is where